Morning, Rabbi Sai. Oh, Baruch Hashem, Kanayin Hara. With the way things are going, we'll have to move into larger premises. Our limud of Sefer Chofetz Chaim. Of Sefer Chofetz Chaim, Hilchos Lashon Hara, every day is as a skus for the refuah of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, he should be zoiche, to a refuah shleima b'kora b'soy shol choyli Yisrael. So we started learning yesterday the Chofetz Chaim's final remark at the end of these halachas, at the end of Sefer Chofetz Chaim, and he started saying something, and as I mentioned yesterday, I didn't get that far, that there's something there that I don't understand, that I'm not sure. I spent some time yesterday trying to look it up in the whatever forum I've got that Meforshim on the Chofetz Chaim, and I couldn't find any clarity in it at all. So I'll share it with you, and we'll see what you think. What he said was that the pasuk says Lo Seilech Rochil Be'Amecho, that the issa of Rechilus, the issa of Lashon Hara, is Be'Amecho. What does Be'Amecho mean? First of all, it means that you only have an issa of Lashon Hara speaking about a Jew. Right? Speaking about a non-Jew, there's no Lashon Hara involved. That's why I've said many times that if you have this real urge to speak Lashon Hara at the Shabbos table, then speak about Starmer, speak about Trump, speak about the Goyim, speak about the traffic wardens, speak about the council, speak about whoever you like who's not Jewish. Yeah, you can. I'm not saying it's ideal material for a Shabbos table, but it's still a lot better than speaking on. It's still a lot better than speaking Lashon Hara about the Yid, or speaking Lo Seilech Rochel Ba'amecho. But then there's also a drosha in Chazal which says, Ba'amecho, Ba'oise Ma'ase Amecho. And that means that if you've got a Jew who is an apikoyos, a Jew who's gone off the derech, we're not talking about Tinoik Shenishbo, we're not talking about somebody who is blameless because he didn't have a Jewish education, or for whatever reason, he's not keeping Oise Ma'ase Amecho, and that Rachmana Litzlan, the hostages, they're not keeping Oise Ma'ase Amecho whilst they're in captivity. There's not, you know, there's no blame attached to them whatsoever, Chas V'Shalom. But somebody who, let's say, was brought up Jewish, was brought up from, and then he goes off the derech, and he becomes an apikorius, he becomes a mummer. I wasn't here on Sunday, I believe Rabbi Zimmerman spoke about whether or not the concept of a mummer exists bizman hazeh. But however you define it, says the Chofetz Chaim, what about that person? Are you allowed to speak rechilus? Are you allowed to speak Lashon Hara about such a person? And by the way, Agav, before we get into it, I'm sure you're not allowed to speak Moiti Shemra. In other words, because that's Sheker. So Moiti Shemra we're not talking about. You can't tell lies about such a person. But is there any issa to speak Lashon Hara about a mummer, about an apikorius? He says as follows. He says that all these halachas that we've learned, that's if somebody is Bechal HaMesecho. Avol Ba'oisan HaNoshim HaKoifrim B'Toyas Hashem. Those people who deny that the Torah is Min HaShemayim. Afilu Rak Ba'ois Achas. They even deny, like the Mora speaks about, a mumma ledovar echot. He does 612 mitzvahs he can do, but the 613th he doesn't accept. Then, v'hamal igim midivrei chazal. And either he doesn't accept some of the words of the Torah, but it's achas of the Torah, that every letter of the Torah he has to accept is genuine. Or, v'hamal igim midivrei chazal. Or he is someone who ridicules, or who makes fun, or who doesn't respect the words of Chazal, the interpretations of Chazal, of the Torah, then this is the line that I'm not sure what he's saying. Mitzvah lefarsem da'atom, hakui zeves. It's a mitzvah to publicize. It's a mitzvah to explain to the public why they've got it wrong. Lefarsem da'atom, hakui zeves. To publicize the fact that these people are walking around and they're telling you the wrong thing, if you like. They're telling you that they're misinterpreting the Torah, or they're interpreting things against the Torah, le'eni hakol, ulaganoisom, and to insult them. Ulaganoisom means to embarrass them, or to insult them. It's a mitzvah. Laganoisom, kedei shlo yilmudu mimaseim haroim, in order that we shouldn't learn mimaseim haroim. Now my question to you is as follows. Is the Chofetz Chaim saying that that person is not bichlal lo'iseilech rochil ba'amecho, he's outside the dinim of Lashon Hara, and therefore you could speak Lashon Hara about private things that he did. He had a fight with somebody in shul. So you can go home and you can tell your wife about it, because he's not Lo Seilech Rochel Ba'amecho. Or is the Chofetz Chaim saying no, that what it's restricted to, or what you're supposed to publicize, and what you're supposed to tell, is his deos, his views, his comments, his opinions. Those sort of things are things that you should publicize and tell people that it's wrong, in order kadesh l'yilmudu mimaaseh
maroi. Like a reform movement, no?
What?
Like a reform
movement, or whatever it is. In other words, what's...
They know, some of them aren't doing it, but they're still...
Correct.
Maybe that's what it means.
Correct. But the question is, what I'm asking you is, supposing that, let's say, this person who is let's call him an apikoyos, okay? He grew up from, and now he's an apikoyos. And he's publicizing it, and he's going around giving droshes, and he's writing books, and he's doing interviews, etc. Then clearly you're not. There's no issa whatsoever in speaking rechilus about him and speaking over the Shabbos table amongst your wife and your guests and your family about that person, about the things that he's doing and the things that he's saying, in order to publicize his deus koizvois. That's clear. The question that I'm asking is, supposing that he's doing things which are wrong, which are nothing whatsoever to do with the fact that he's a mummer. Nothing whatsoever to do with the apikoreus. Yeah? He was arrested because he was involved in some serious fraud. Yeah? He was involved in slave trafficking or something like that. Yeah? Something personal which has nothing to do with his deus koizvois. Are we saying that such a person is outside the dinim of lo seilech rochel ba'amecho? Because once he's not oise ma'aseh amcho, lo seilech rochel ba'amecho doesn't apply to him at all. And therefore he's outside the dinim of lashon hara. Or is that limited? Is the lashon hara that you're allowed to speak about him, is that limited specifically to things which have to do with his apikorsus, with things that have to do with his trying to publicize and to influence others against, and you're supposed to be influencing people back? Now, from the real question is, when it says, a mitzvah lefarsim datom hakoizeves, it's a mitzvah to publicize their opinions and to say why they're wrong, le'ene hakoil, Ulaganoisom, and to insult them. Is it talking about insulting their opinions or insulting the people? When it says ulaganoisom, yeah? Is it saying that? Now I think the Chofetz Chaim is saying, because he then continues, Kadesh lo yilmudu mimaaseh maroim, yeah, that you shouldn't learn from them. Therefore, the thing that you're not allowed to say is that you're allowed to say are things which insult their views, things which insult their opinions, things which refute the things that they're saying. Those are the things that you're allowed to say. So you can say, Pliny, who is an apikoyos, was giving an interview on the radio yesterday, and he said this, that, and the other, and you know the whole world's listening in, but he's totally wrong because he said this, and the truth is that the Torah says different. That's speaking Lashon Hara about the person, what he was doing, to do with his deos koizvois, kadesh lo yilmudu memenu. Or you could say no. You could say that once he is... Lo seilech rochel ba'amecho, and he's not oise ma'aseh amcho, he's no longer lo seilech rochel ba'amecho, he's outside the parasha of Lashon Hara, he's outside the parasha of Rechilus. As I said, he'll stay inside Moitzi Shemra. Right? To say sheker, I don't think you'll be allowed to do in any event. Yeah, because that's a problem of me. I'm not allowed to speak sheker, full stop. So it doesn't matter whether I'm speaking about anybody. I can imagine you're not allowed to speak sheker about a goy either. So a sheker is one thing, but we're talking about rechilus, we're talking about telling tales, we're talking about relating things that a person has done which are bad. So is it only the things that he's done bad in his apikorsus, in his reform movement, or whatever it is that he's involved in, or is it that he is no longer a person about whom there is an issa lashon hara? I think it's probably from the nusach of the Chofetz Chaim, it's mashma, that you still can't speak rechilus about him on a personal level. Wow. Right? I think. And I think it's only kadesh l'yilmudu m'maaseh maroi. And with that, the Chofetz Chaim finishes off Hilchos Lashon Hara. He says, Tomu hakalolim mehilchos isuri rosh shana urechilus. Baruch Hashem b'siyata d'shmai. We finished it. I don't know how many times in Torah way. What? Yeah, I don't know how many times we've learnt through Hilchos Lashon Hara. We've certainly learnt through this time the whole of Hilchos Lashon Hara urechilus as a source for the refuah of Yosef Dov Ben Chayla, and he should be zoicha to refuah shleima. And now the Chofetz Chaim then continues. Seeing as our speaker is not here.
I don't know, I thought I saw him.
You saw him. I thought he was here. He was. I davened Shacharis upstairs. He davened with us, and he was reviewing his notes as well during Shacharis. Lashon Hara. Sorry, not allowed to. That was only Ben Gavra LeGavra. But he is around. Okay, so let's go back. I had a complaint on Shabbos that last week Sunday the speaker was late. You asked a question, and then during the week you never got through to the answer. Never got around to giving the answer. Yeah, the speaker was late, so I started saying, okay, so I'll tell you Dvar Torah on the Sedra. And then I never got around to the answer. Okay, so the question was, I imagine we'll do the same today. I'll repeat the question and the speaker will turn up. So the question was, yes, Vani Akshe a slave paroi. I will make the paroi hard. I will make him not refuse to send the Bnei Yisrael out, even though Lechora he will by then have become, his heart will become soft, and he will want to send the Bnei Yisrael out, and he would agree to send the Bnei Yisrael out. And at that stage, I will make his heart hard, I will harden his heart, and as a result of that, he will still refuse, despite everything that he's seen, and despite all the makkas, and despite all the punishments that he's had, he will refuse to send the Bnei Yisrael out. And the question is, how can you punish him for that? If he would naturally have already sent the Bnei Yisrael out, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu made his heart hard, then the Rabbeinu Shlom can't afterwards blame him and punish him for that.
Started at the Torah Way North West London, Thursday, Ches Shabbat, 6th of February. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Shatz, Shlita, fair and unfair competition. This week's Torah is sponsored by family Didi Rosenberg in fond memory of his father of Yitzchak Tzvi, Menachem Moshe Meisberg and Brochel. On his 30th Yahrzeit last Sunday, the Sussach Shmuel and Chayrim and Lechomo, Sheikh Sulebotem, Le Shalom Bim Heiro.
Amen.
My apologies as a Chesh Mishpat, someone is learning Chesh Mishpat. I didn't mean to start late. I thought we started the quarter. I'm not sure how I managed to make this mistake. My apologies. But I'm sure you heard something better than me this morning to start off.
Unfair competition.
No, I don't think that's a problem. We'll discuss that in a minute. Just to start off, we're dealing with something that Pashtus in most cases has to do with business halacha. So I just want to say something fascinating that I saw. There's a stira between two gemaras, a contradiction between two gemaras. So one place it says that the very first question we're asked when we go upstairs, Achmei Vesem Shana, is Nasasav Nasata Ben Muna, which means, did you conduct your business dealings faithfully? Did you do the correct thing in business dealings? And the other place it says that Chilas Dinoi Shel Adam B'Divrei Torah, which means that the first question we're asked is, did you learn Torah? So the Rishonim already discussed this question, but I saw something fascinating which ties in very nicely to what we're speaking about this morning. The Kedusha Slava, the B'dit Shavarov, writes that for a person to conduct his business dealings faithfully, he has to first learn. And it's not only that he learns first in the morning, he has a kvias in the morning, and then he goes out and does whatever he wants in the business world. When a person learns in the morning the halachas of what he needs to know in business, the whole day he's going through the day and he's busy saying these divrei Torah, busy being mekayim these divrei Torah. It's not just chalila v'chas, theoretical. He's going and fulfilling these divrei Torah and he's speaking them out as he does them. You have to be careful weights and measures. You've got to be careful who you take poach as a client. So you've got to be careful about fair pricing, the right pricing, not overcharging. And the whole day he's learning. He's not just learned in the morning for a half an hour, and that's Tchilas Dinei Shel Adam B'Divrei Torah. It's Nasas of Nasat Ben Muna goes together with Tchilas Dinei Shel Adam B'Divrei Torah, which means the whole day he's learning. So today we're discussing, or we're hoping to discuss together, the topic of fair and unfair competition. So first of all, is competition a good thing or a bad thing? So the Gemara Bava Basra talks about that the person wanted to give out some freebies, and he's going to entice customers to come in. And when his neighbor does it, there's a new shop that opens on the block. Today we're not going to go into when you're allowed to open a new shop, when you're not allowed to, but there's a new shop that opens on the block, and he's busy giving out lollipops. And all the little boys and little girls are telling their daddies and their mummies, please take me to the shop, we need the free lollipops. And the other guy is looking down the road and saying, oh no, I've lost all my customers. And the Gemara Basra says something very simple. Will you give out sweets? You give out something different. You give out crisps. And all the other the boys and girls will tell the daddies and the mammies, please come. So competition, the Gemara is saying that competition is a good thing. Go out there, do something similar. And that way, you will also entice the customers. But what happens in the following story? There's a house for sale, and you know it's going up for whatever it is in London for £1 million. And the buyers enter the negotiations with the seller, and they're busy negotiating. The buyer wants more than £1 million. The buyer wants to pay less than £1 million. The seller most probably wants more than £1 million. And these negotiations are going on. They're going on for some time. And they've gone to see the property once, twice, three times. And they're nearing the end. And they're happy. Everything looks fine and dandy. Until, you know, and they've not closed anything. And the night before they're about to close, it looks very promising. Then a third person enters into the excitement. And he says, I'd also like to have a quick look at the house, and I think I'm going to offer something a little bit more. So then starts a price war. But was the third person allowed to enter in the agreement, into the discussion? And was the buyer allowed, was the seller allowed? Did the seller do anything wrong? Did the buyer do anything wrong? Does anybody want to suggest something?
In English law, until there's a contract, there's nothing. And anybody can pull out, and anybody can get involved. And people know that when they're negotiating. Until you've signed a contract, there's nothing.
So
they often say, and I was there before the other person.
Yeah, yeah.
Did they spend any money on their lawyer?
So far they've not spent any money. I mean, they've gone to look at the price, spent time, they've put in a few days, wherever it is, they've gone to look at it, and they had the good negotiations. They've not spent anything. There's been no verbal agreement, but it's looking very promising.
Very promising. As long as the buyer can pull out, it can look very promising with the roses, but he can pull out.
No, not at all yet.
It would be the decent thing not to interfere. What? It would be Midas Chasidus not to interfere if you know that somebody is after a house and is trying to buy it.
Who says?
But on the other hand...
Who says?
The precious says that.
This is in London, you can do what you like. Actually, you've got to be nice.
But there's a difference between there's a difference between two people saying here. You were saying that it's the seller should offer it first to the first buyer, and he was saying that the buyer, the new potential buyer, might be doing something wrong. So let's have a quick look at Gemara in Kedushin and Testament. Aleph talks about that Rav Gidl was looking to buy a piece of land, and Rav Abba went and bought it. So Rav Gidl went to Rav Zeira and told him the story. I'm looking to buy this piece of land. And this new Rav Abba ran in the middle and bought the land. What's going on here? So he went to... Rav Zeira went to Rav Yitzchak Nafcha, and he told him, wait till he comes up to Eile Regel Zayin, and I will already deal with him. He comes up with a regal and he asked him, what happens when someone, the moral says, Oni hamahapach b'charora, Oni is looking to, I'm not going to say acquire, but he's looking to get this free or not free bread, and a third person comes and takes it. What's the din? So Rabbi Abba told him, he's called a Rasha. So at that point, Rabbi Yitzchak Nafcha turned around to him and says, well, why did you do it? There's this piece of land that's going up for sale. Rav Gidl's trying to take it, and you're going to take it away from him. What happened? So he says, I didn't know. So Gemara goes through the whole story that he didn't want to sell it because it's superstitious to sell a first piece of land. We don't normally go with this today, but in those days it wasn't a good sign to sell the first piece of land. Rav Gidl didn't want to take it because Sein Matana Sichya. And it was left there, La'arad Rabbonin, so it went to Tztokah, which was probably a very good idea. But the question is how we take this Gemara Halach Lamai. So we've been talking about a lot of the people mentioned over here, that there's been no contract. There's been a deal. There's a saying in the Velt that there's a deal is not a deal until it's off in Tish. You know, until it's closed, until... And the other question is, how do we apply this? In what case do we apply this? Let's ask a more important question. What's wrong with it? I mean, you know, they've not closed anything. What's wrong with it? So Rashi talks about that sheyered l'chay chaveri. We're talking about here a free piece of land, and someone's put in a lot of effort to try and get it. He's extended. We're not talking about money yet, but he's put in a lot of effort, and therefore it's considered like it's his livelihood. He's put in his time, is more important than money, and this is his business. I mean, this is what he's doing. He's taken time off work to go and look for it, and therefore he's like taking away someone's livelihood. Rashi also learns the Gemara that the Gemara is talking about a free piece of land. Tosfos has a different problem with it. Tosfos says we can't be talking about a free piece of land. We're only talking about where there's a job offer, or he's trying to rent a property. And in this case, there's a different problem. Tosfos says, go and look for this opportunity elsewhere. Why do you have to go and take this piece of land? There's loads of pieces of land for sale. There's loads of job opportunities. Go and look elsewhere. So there's two important differences between Rashi and Tosfos, and this is going to hopefully take us through today's morning, until 9 o'clock. Don't worry, I'm not here all day. The two differences between Rashi and Tosfos. Number one, the difference is, are we talking about a free piece of land, a free job, a free opportunity? Which Rashi says, we're talking about a free thing. And Tosfos says, we're not talking about a free thing, it's only where it's something for sale, or it's a job opportunity. And number two is, the second difference is, Rashi says the problem is Yeri L'chai Chaveri is taking away, he's taking away someone else's livelihood. And Tosfos says, there's opportunistic cruelty, he could have gone and looked for the same thing somewhere else. So, back to our case. The Prisha, so let's just examine this from the lens of the Gemara. Before we go into what everyone says that, you know, they've not closed anything or they've not done anything. The person over here is looking to buy this property, and there's negotiations going on, and there's a third person that's entered the fray. So, on first glance, l'chayra, it should be that there's a problem of anima b'charora. The first buyer is looking to buy the piece of land, and there's a second, they've more or less agreed, and the second person has now interfered. But as everyone rightfully said, there's no agreement. They can back out. Yeah, there's no guarantee that the seller is going to have this buyer. What's the second person done anything wrong? So it's taka true that the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, the Rimor Paskins, that this issa of Nikarosha only applies when they've agreed, when there's a contract happens. They've agreed everything, and it's all done. Now, it's not like some of us have said that, you know, that they can't back out, because even once they've made the contract, they've agreed the price, subject to contract, and everything has gone through, they could still back out. There's no lawyers involved. Sorry?
Till they've signed.
I mean, even once they've signed on the, you know, there's two stages. There's the estate agent, and then you've got the lawyers. And even after exchange, theoretically, you could back out. You're just going to lose your exchange money. So the Rama's talking about in the case, once they've agreed by the estate agent, and they've signed, and there's a psikostomim, they've agreed the price. They've agreed it's going to be £1.5 million for this house. And they've now all closed it. What someone has rightfully said is the Prisha goes a step further. And he says, Midas Chassidus, that if we've already, it's more or less understood. It's not just we're entering in the opening negotiations. The negotiations are finished. You know, we're going to agree. It's clear to everyone looking at the story, this is the way the story is. More than just heading. It's going to finish over here. So in this case, the Prisha says, It's even in this case, the buyer also has a problem to enter in negotiations. Now, we mentioned earlier, who has the problem? Is it the buyer, the second buyer, or is it the seller? Can the seller go elsewhere and look for it? So the Avnineza and the Prisha write that there's no problem for the seller to go and look elsewhere. And this is based on what we're just understanding over here. When the seller is looking elsewhere, so has he agreed with the first person? Or has he not agreed? It's clear he's not agreed. I mean, he might be saying that, yes, I'm looking and I'm happy with this price. But when he's looking elsewhere, it's like, you know, he's agreeing because he doesn't have, for lack of choice, he's agreeing that he's going to go for this £1.5 million. Unfortunately, that's all he's going to get for his house. But ideally, he wants £2 million for his house. So he's agreeing with this person, you know, let's go with this price, and you know, they've more or less gone for it. But when he's running elsewhere, then we can see, it's clear from his actions that he's clearly looking for a higher price. I'll be told by estate agents that normally the estate agents will take it off the market once they have agreed the price is subject to contract, unless the seller tells them, please keep it on the market, I'm looking for a higher price. Yes, we've agreed subject to contract. I'm not so sure how morally correct it is, and we find there are different cases in Shulchan Aruch that we accept these morally correct principles. I mean, for just to mention one case by Metzronos, most of you will probably know, when you've got a house for sale and the neighbor next door wants to buy it to make his house, make an extension, a bigger thing, then the Shulchan Aruch in that case goes so far to say that Beis Din will take it out of the new buyer's hands. That's how far our morally correct principles go. It's not for today's discussion, but I'm just saying that morally correct things are not just a nice thing to do. They have a place in Shulchan Aruch. But in this case, the seller, there's no issa of Oni HaMahapich B'Charoro, which will give him the title of Rosha, in the case for the seller to go and look elsewhere and find a higher buyer. So what is the difference between Rashi and Tosfos? That means it's very nice in a Lomdei Shashir to work out Rashi saying that, you know, it's taking away someone's livelihood. Tosfos is saying that it's opportunistic cruelty. But what's to make a difference in halacha? And the difference between metzia and a find or someone's livelihood. And the difference is what happens where you can't find anything like this elsewhere. So it's a unique property. It's a unique find. It's something unique. So in this case, there'll be a difference between Rashi and Tosfos. According to Rashi, that says it's, or even by a metzia, so it makes no difference if it's a unique find or not a unique find. It could be even worse by a unique find. And that's how the Shulchan Aruch goes with it. The Shulchan Aruch brings both Rashi and Tosfos, and he leaves it fairly open. That means both in a unique find or a not a unique find, you'll have this problem of Onim HaPach B'Charoro, which will give him the title of a wicked man. A Rosha, he shouldn't, the new buyer shouldn't be entering into the negotiations, or the new finder shouldn't be going after the find that the first person went with. According to Tosfos, nevertheless, is we tell him, go and look for an opportunity. What's the problem on Onim HaPach B'Charoro? We tell him, go and look elsewhere for this opportunity. He tells you, I can't. It's a unique property. It's got 8 bedrooms. It's even got a garden in the heart of London. This is a very unique property. You can't find anything like this elsewhere. So according to Tosfos, this won't be a problem. He's not done anything wrong. The new buyer, even if they've, you know, agreed subject to contract, you know, the first person's not expending any money in this case. He's not being a gazlem. He's not stealing anything. It's just, in a regular case, the only problem would be is opportunistic cruelty. Go and look elsewhere for this thing. I can't look elsewhere. So the Ramah Paskins that like Tosfos, and he goes with the opinion that the only problem Onim HaPach B'Charoro is opportunistic cruelty, and therefore, if you can't find it elsewhere, this won't be a problem. That's the basic machlokas of Rashi and Tosfos, and how we go with the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions, both Rashi and he brings also the more Chumradic opinion, that even if it's a unique find, you have this problem. And the Ramah seems to go with the Tosfos, that if it's a unique opportunity, you won't have this problem. The Shulchan Aruch Harav Halacha Lemaisa says the Yirei Shemayim should be machmir himself, should be more stringent on himself, and he should go like the opinion of Rashi, that even if you can't find this elsewhere, you should still be machmir for this case. So what about in a case where we have a job offer? So there's a person looking to find employment, and he calls up this company, asks them, you know, do you have any open jobs? And they say, it's very interesting you called this morning. If you'd have called late in the day, there'd be nothing available. But at this point, we're still looking. And we have someone we're looking like we're closing with. So come on over for an interview, and we'll see. You know, we're looking like we're closing with the first individual, but you never know. Can the second person go over for the interview? Would anyone like to suggest anything?
Because you mean if I do, then you can go.
But he hasn't gained, he hasn't lost.
He hasn't got the job. He's been invited to come.
He didn't decide yet to come.
He's made himself available as number two.
Okay, but...
Have the employer already told the first interviewee, if you like, the previous one, that he's giving him the job?
They've not agreed anything.
They've not agreed.
But it's looking like... It's looking like it's promising. And if they would have agreed, but they've not signed any contract yet.
That's what I'm asking.
So let's make it easier. They've agreed, but they've not signed any contract yet. Right. So they've not
told him you've got the job.
Can the second person go for the interview?
Yes, otherwise we'll never get a job.
Fair enough. He might be a bit. If it's that bad, then he shouldn't be going for the first place.
Morals, which you had a few minutes ago.
His ego.
Morals,
candidate.
So I think halacha lemaisa. I think this would depend on the two things that we've discussed earlier. If we go with the opinion of Rashi that he's taking away someone's livelihood, he's most certainly taking away someone else's livelihood. There's the first person has been told. Verbally only, there's been no contract signed, that he's got the job, and therefore the second person has a problem to enter go to the interview. But if we go with the opinion of Tosfos, it's not a problem of taking away someone's livelihood, it's opportunistic cruelty. So it'll depend on the job. If there's loads of such jobs, he's going to be a secretary, and there's hundreds of jobs as a secretary, then he will have a problem going to it, because Tosfos will tell him, and this is how even the Ramah, who is more makel, will paskin, go and look elsewhere for this job. But if it's a very unique job, and it's I don't know which jobs are more unique, I'll leave it to everyone else to work out, but I'm saying it's a unique job. And it's like this individual is saying, that he won't find a job if he doesn't take this one. And therefore, he doesn't have the problem of opportunistic cruelty of we tell him go and look elsewhere. Because where is he going to look? There isn't another such job. Again, we still have...
Sorry, in Hashkofa, we say that you can't take away someone else's panos. You can't take someone else's panos from Hashemai. So if it wasn't Hashem, they should get the job, then the guy won't get the job. No. They're not taking away his panos. Okay.
But that's for the problem of the reasoning of Ein Adam Negeir, not the reasoning, the reality... of Ein Adam Negeir B'Mleinim Shel Chaveiroi is only for the first buyer, candidate, is that's for him to face that reality, and that's taka true. But when it comes to Choshe Mishpat, we don't tell the second person who's taking away the first person's job, we don't tell him, Ein Adam Negeir B'Mleinim, you don't have a problem, the first person will definitely find it, you can just go and do whatever you want.
I'm asking why not? So if that's what the Hashkofa says, why does Choshe Mishpat say different?
I don't think it's saying different. I think the question is how should he be approaching the situation? In this case, it's taking away this person's job. That's what it's looking like on this case. Then it's the Gemara talks about another case. I'll say very briefly that there was a person's head was floating on the river, and one of the Amiraim said. That the one Tanon, the Mishnah Novice says that the person who the person who drowned you, yeah. who killed you, will one day get his just, and you got your just because there was a previous person. So it's clear that there's justice in the world, but nevertheless, we have to know, we have to go with the correct things. Just to summarize, that when it comes,
this guy hasn't got the job yet. So he hasn't been given the job, and he might never be given the job. So if you don't present yourself for an interview, you're entitled to do that.
If the first person's been verbally given the job, he might have a problem.
But
he's been told verbally he's going to get the job.
That's not what the kind of person we have. We haven't.
But if he's told verbally, even according to the
pre, if he'd been given the job, then he wouldn't want anybody else to come for an interview.
No, but the person who's the interviewer, the person who's doing the interviews tells him he's gotten a job. But he's thinking we could find someone a little bit better.
Or cheaper.
But nevertheless, the second person has a problem to enter into that argument if he knows that the first person's gotten it.
He could be better qualified. The whole thing is very kind of nebulous. You have to know all the details.
So the question is, can the second person go if the first person has already been given the job and there's a problem?
That's how the job market works at the moment.
Yeah. Is that correct with how?
Yes. Why is the whole economic system?
It's going back to the old principle that once it's not, as long as it's not signed, both parties know that things can change. That's the din of the machusa. That's the reality. People know that until the contract is signed, things can change.
But I still don't think that makes it correct for the second person to enter in the fray if the first person is verbally given the job.
Morally or halachically?
Halachically, that means in Beis Din we won't be mechayev of the second person to back out, because the term Rosha doesn't mean it's a gezeila. But nevertheless, the term Rosh is quite a serious term. And if a person will enter into a sort of an agreement, he's getting in between these two people once they've verbally accepted that the first person is going to get the job, there'll be a problem with the second person entering the job. Even if the first person knows that until it's signed, things might change.
According to Rashi.
And if it's a regular job, then even the kontosus. We pass the tosus. There's the reshma. There are more passages like tosus, and the reshma miachme that of the shochanah charav that he should still be mach. There's a shochanah charav says a reshma should be machme on himself and should go like Rashi nevertheless. So again, in the job market, people might be going like the regular opinion of Rashi when it's a regular job.
I was a bit nervous about what I was doing. The next case is where someone's given them a date.
and the second person wants to steal it away. If you go with Tosef anyway, the only problem is opportunity cruelty. Each person is unique, and you can't find this girl anywhere else because every person has unique qualities, and therefore by a data point to Tosef, you can take it away from someone else. It's only by a generic property or a generic job you can't take away from someone else. So you're more and more the couple is arrived to Tosef.
There's a good story about a boy who says to his friend, his friend went out on a date, so they do.